Welcome to It's Your Community with Vanessa Denha, a public affairs presentation of News Talk 760 WJR.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to It's Your Community. I'm Vanessa Denha here. We're talking about All Hands Volunteers. It's a U.S.-based nonprofit organization addressing the immediate and long-term needs of communities impacted by natural disasters by engaging volunteers, partner organizations, and local communities. To talk with us about that is Reuben Grandin. He's the Project Detroit director, and they have been here for a little while now. Reuben, you guys got here because of some floodings, right, in 2014?
Yeah, that's right. We got here right after the floods happened in August of 2014. We had teams on the ground about 3 days after the flooding occurred. As many listeners probably remember, the Detroit Metro experienced a lot of flash flooding on that day. There was over 7 inches of rain that came down in one afternoon. So the homes and the roads were overwhelmed by this water, which could not drain quick enough. Mm-hmm. Governor Snyder declared it a state disaster, and following that, Obama declared it a federal major disaster about 6 weeks later. Mm-hmm. There were actually more than 129,000 folks from the Macomb, Oakland, and Wayne counties that had applied for federal assistance through FEMA.
Wow.
This is actually the largest presidentially declared disaster in the U.S. in 2014. So we mobilized our teams to assist folks with their recovery process. So we helped different homeowners sort through their possessions and save what they could. And we also helped them to do what we call a muck and gut process. So trying to clear the flood damage out of the home. Mm-hmm. So our primary objective there is to make sure that the house is safe and sanitary and a functional living space for the folks living there. So we would remove any of water damaged or moldy drywall, flooring, doors, carpets, anything that posed a serious public health risk that needed to get out of there. Mm-hmm. We would mobilize teams of volunteers to do this for free for the homeowners.
You know, Reuben, I remember people posting pictures on Facebook of like the sidewalks of this, all this stuff from their house and how overwhelmed they were. And I'm now listening to you talk. I forgot how bad that flood was. You know, it was really bad.
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, it's one of those disasters that didn't get as much attention as I think that it deserved. Mm-hmm. Being the largest disaster in 2014, you would think that there would be a lot of organizations mobilized and a lot of resources here to help with the recovery. Mm-hmm. There were quite a few organizations here in the very beginning, but many have since left. So we're the only organization in Detroit that has been able to stay here and continue to respond to those needs. There was a study by Wayne State in August where they noted that over 3,000 people in Detroit alone still needed mold remediation services, or those initial cleanup services. Mm-hmm. And that was only for the most vulnerable population, which they defined as single-parent households with disabilities, individuals with disabilities,
yeah,
and households where the resident may have medical issues or maybe elderly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, surprisingly, we're still seeing houses that have these cases where there's a high level of mold. And so we've been able to stick around, and much thanks to one of our local partners, which is the Northwest Detroit Flood Recovery Project.
Mm-hmm.
They're of the United Methodist Church. We've been able to continue working together and identify some of the needs that are still persistent in these neighborhoods.
Let me ask you this, Reuben Grandin. Are you focused now, a year and a half later, on the mold issues more than anything right now?
Right now, we're doing a hybrid approach. We are continuing to do mold remediation and help with the cleanup process. And we're also doing rebuild and recovery work. So we did 6 months of what we call the response work of the cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
And we finished that project in February and transitioned our attention primarily to rebuilding. Through one of our other partner organizations that's active here, Mennonite Disaster Services,
mm-hmm,
they recognized that there were still a lot of people out there that did not receive the initial cleanup services. So they continued to work on that throughout the summer. And with our partners at the Northwest Detroit Flood Recovery Project, we recognized that the numbers out there were just huge, like the Wayne State study explained.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided in September of this year to resume our muck and gut activity alongside repair.
When you say rebuild and repair, are you rebuilding and repairing homes?
Yeah, all of the homes that we rebuild and repair are owner-occupied places. So it's dependent upon how that space was utilized before the flood. It kind of guides what we're going to do for a rebuild process. So we work directly with case managers in order to identify what scope of work is appropriate for each location or each house. So it's on a house-by-house basis. And then if it was used as bedrooms and primary living space, then we will give it a full rebuild and bring it back to what it was before the flood. If it was maybe used just for storage or something like that, then we would just help out by painting and putting it back to what it was before. So we do that on a case-by-case basis.
So if it's those people that were, their living conditions were affected, their bedrooms and everything, where have they been all this time? Are they living in those conditions or do they have to move out?
Some people have moved out where they're not living in the house, but those are pretty infrequent cases. A lot of people are still habiting the houses that may have high levels of mold and other bacteria inside of the basement. So as a lot of people may know who are listening to this, the flood in the homes came up through the drainage system. So it was black water mixed with the storm water. So there was fecal matter that came up through the storm drains and flooded people's basements. Sometimes it was as much as 2 inches, and other times we've seen 4 or 5 feet of water in the basement. So with that level of bacteria, it is a very great environment, unfortunately, for the mold to grow and to reproduce. So in a lot of these houses, even though it is a very unsanitary living condition, a lot of people are still living there. So we feel like there's a big sense of urgency for us to continue the work that we're doing here in Detroit and to continue recruiting as many volunteers as we possibly can and serving as many homeowners as we possibly can in order to take care of this mold issue that still persists.
How many volunteers have you had, Reuben Grandin, work on this project in Michigan?
Yeah, since we started in August of 2014, we've had just under 900 volunteers. A lot of those folks are people from the Detroit area, as well as people from all over the world. I think we've represented over 32 nationalities now on Project Detroit.
Wow.
We just added one to that last week. We've done well over 15,000 volunteer hours since we got here. Mm-hmm. In the initial response phase from August to February, we must gutted and sanitized over 400 houses. And in the rebuild phase, we started with repairing 5 daycare centers through a partnership with local Development Centers Incorporated. Mm-hmm. Those were in Northwest Detroit. Mm-hmm. And then we started to work on single-family homes. And our first 3 we did with Fifth Third Bank through a grant foundation, or through a grant through them, which was through the Federal Home Loan Bank of Indianapolis. And then in May, we started our partnership with the Northwest Detroit Flood Recovery Project of the United Methodist Church. Reverend Rebecca Wilson is in charge of that project. And they are the ones who do all of the case management. They have a very holistic approach to disaster case management, which we're really proud to be a part of. And then we plug in and sort of help boost capacity by being the implementing partner for all of the construction projects. Mm-hmm. So we're able to leverage the power of volunteers at a cost-effective rate to get into the houses and perform any of the muck and gut services that are still existed from the floods and all of the rebuild and repair activity too. Mm-hmm. So since we partnered with them, we've done 31 home repairs and we've done 67 home muck and guts.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive, Reuben Grandin, Project Detroit Director for All Hands Volunteers. And you talked about having just a little less than 900 volunteers. But, you know, is the funding primarily through grant dollars through these various organizations, like you mentioned, the bank?
Yeah, it is. It's all privately funded, so it's something that we worked on piece by piece. A lot of our donations actually come from people contributing, just like you and me, people who had a good experience with All Hands as a volunteer or at one point in their life as perhaps a beneficiary are giving back to this organization because they've seen the power that it has to help people in times of natural disaster and help people on their recovery. So we always respond to disasters as fast as we can, regardless of if we are able to raise any money to do it or not. As long as we have sufficient funds in the general fund, we'll send a team down to respond. So that's what we're doing right now in Texas and in Missouri in response to Superstorm Goliath this winter. But as we've been able to stay in Detroit longer, we've started to develop more and more local partnerships. Mm-hmm. And through these partnerships, we're able to raise some funds. So Fifth Third Bank is a great example of that. We were able to apply for some grant money to help people in their recovery from the flood. And right now, our partnership with the United Methodist Church Project is funded by UMCOR, which is the United Methodist Committee on Relief. Mm-hmm. And they've been significant contributors to this project as well.
Ruben,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
As I say, we also worked with United Way early on in the response phase. And the Wayne Metro Community Action Agency were both big supporters of the early response phase as well.
I was just going to say this, you know, listening to you talk, this is really a group concerted effort. I mean, a lot of people are involved in this project.
Yeah, absolutely. We really focus on building local partnerships and being able to leverage the power of every different organization or stakeholders' interest and capabilities to maximize the effect that we can all have together. Mm-hmm. So I think as an organization, we're very good at knowing what we do and what we do well, and we're not trying to get outside of that box too much. So being able to plug into local partners here, like, for example, over the summer, this wasn't quite flood-related, but it was part of a training program for us and a local partnership with an organization called Motor City Blightbusters.
Oh, yeah, I know them well. I know them very well. Yep.
Great organization to work with.
Wonderful. I'm good friends with his sister who started it. Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, good. So that's a great example of them having programming in place where they're already identifying the community needs and they know how to tackle it. And we're just able to come in and offer some more people that have experience in that line of work, you know, able to build capacity and mobilize more volunteers to get the same work done. So that's very similar to the flood recovery, too. We're working with the Northwest Detroit Flood Recovery Project, and they have case managers that are lifelong Detroiters, so they understand Detroit through and through and all of the variables that are present here that we may not understand because we're a project-based international organization, and we've only been in Detroit since the floods. So by being able to partner with them, I think we're really able to get to the work faster. They're able to do the holistic approach and help kind of guide where our resources are best allocated, and we're able to support their programming, too, by being the implementing partner and taking care of more of the field work and technical side.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, Ruben Grandin, that, you know, this was the biggest natural disaster in 2014 was right here in Michigan, was the flooding. Was that was because of the extent of the disaster? Is that the reason that you've been here so long, or is this typically how long all hands volunteers would be at a disaster site?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one of our kind of unique things about all hands volunteers is that we try to find where the need is that's maybe not being publicized as much as some of the other needs. So recently in South Carolina, we responded to the floods in October, and there were a lot of people around the Columbia area, but I have a lot of respect for our director of U.S. response, Sherry. She identified the need in some of the more rural areas. Mm. So instead of focusing where all the other organizations were at that time, she went to a different region that was still in large need.
Oh, that was smart.
I also experienced that in Mississippi. There were tornadoes there in the spring of 2014, and a lot of people were in the county seat, Tupelo, which is, fun fact, where Elvis was born. But a lot of organizations weren't focused on the rural area, which was around Tupelo, but just as badly damaged. So we were one of the only two organizations out there in the rural areas, helping out where things weren't getting as much attention as it really deserved. Here in Detroit, we were one of the first organizations to move from the suburbs of Royal Oak and Warren into the city of Detroit proper. And I really am proud to work with All Hands because our leadership and staff at our headquarters in Boston has dedicated a lot of money and a lot of resources to be able to stay in Detroit despite the odds and the challenges that we have faced here. Mm-hmm. As an organization in terms of raising money, but it's because we're committed to helping the population that's relatively underserved where Detroit didn't get the news coverage that it did, and a lot of people moved on rather quickly, we've been able to stick around and continue to help.
Which is really impressive, because I think you're right. It didn't, I mean, we saw it a little bit on the news here. Obviously, it was bad, but listening to you talk, I didn't even realize the severity based on what I followed in the news about how bad this flood was. I was really surprised when my colleague Chris Harris told me you guys were still here, and I'm like, wow, that must have been a really damaging flood to many homes and businesses that we weren't even aware of. We're talking with Ruben Grandin, Project Detroit Director for All Hands Volunteers. And, you know, we're getting a good glimpse, good details about what you guys do, Ruben Grandin. But can you tell me a little bit more about just All Hands on Volunteers in general, about the organization, its history and everything like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned in the beginning, we are a U.S.-based nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
And our focus is to address the immediate and long-term needs of communities that have been affected by natural disasters.
Mm-hmm.
So we do this by engaging volunteers and partner organizations within the local communities. It was about 10 years ago when we were founded. Business executive David Campbell was traveling around the area that was devastated by the Indian Ocean earthquake and tsunami. And David recognized a large number of people that wanted to help. He figured out how to effectively connect those who need the help with those who wanted to help. And that's how All Hands was born.
Mm.
It wasn't long after that, the next August, that Hurricane Katrina hit in the U.S.
Oh, yeah?
And that was our first domestic project in 2005.
Oh, okay. Wow, you guys had went right to work. That was no small project to take on.
Yeah, and from there we've grown to have both domestic and international projects going on. At the same time, we continue to grow and reach more people each year. This past year has probably been one of our busiest years. We've had most projects running simultaneously than we have in any year prior. Mm-hmm. And this has also been our 10-year anniversary. So it's been a good active year for us. Right now, we have current projects in the response to the floods and tornadoes that were caused by the storm Goliath over Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We have teams in Mississippi and Texas and Missouri. And we also have the Rebuild and Recovery Project in the mountains of Nepal after the earthquake last year.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a project that's been in the Philippines since 2013 in response to Super Typhoon Haiyan.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're also currently preparing for a rebuild project in South Carolina, following those floods I was talking about, and also Africa, which flooded last year, almost a year ago now.
So let me
here in Detroit. Oh, go ahead. Okay,
so, is there a point person like you, Ruben, at every one of these sites?
That's a great question. Every site, every project, we call them. Mm-hmm. Every site has a project director and what we would call probably a skeleton kind of staff.
Mm-hmm.
So we employ enough leadership that is able to mobilize the volunteers that we recruit.
Okay.
So at every project, we have a project director and a volunteer coordinator. We also have a field coordinator and a program manager. So those two roles that I mentioned last are both in the field, identifying the work and creating a right work plan for us to successfully accomplish the task.
Got it. Got it. So you guys can be all over, you know, the world at any given time.
Yeah, absolutely. We always have teams prepared and continue to prepare more bench capacity, so we have more volunteers, team leaders, and staff that are getting ready to deploy to the next natural disaster. It's common for us to have, on average, about 6 projects going on at any time, although mm-hmm. it keeps getting a little bit bigger than that as we continue to grow.
Do you guys have people that just monitor weather all over the world? I mean, because these are natural disasters. I mean, are they monitoring work of meteorologists and if people that are predicting earthquakes and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, we sure do. We have 4 senior staff. 2 are responsible for watching the immediate weather, so taking a look and seeing what the response type work could potentially be. 1 is an international position and the other is a domestic position. And then we also have 2 other senior staff members who are in charge of the rebuild projects.
Mm-hmm.
The one is similarly, one is for international projects and the other is for domestic projects. So, yes, mm-hmm. I'm always seeing Facebook updates from both of the people responsible for the response projects. And we always have an eye on if we can help and be of assistance. We'll often post up on our Facebook page after a disaster hits or in the lead up to a potential disaster, and give people updates from our internal sources so they can understand what the impacts could be. And we often deploy a disaster assistance response team, a DART team, right after the disaster hits. And this is a very small group of very experienced people that go in and assess the situation to see if that's something first that all hands could help out with, mm-hmm. based on our current scope of work, and as well to see if we're invited by that local community to come participate in the recovery.
Ruben Grandin, Project Detroit Director for All Hands Volunteers, how much longer do you anticipate being in Detroit?
The need here is so big that I think we could easily be here for another year. And when I say the need, I mean specific to the floods. There was a study released by Wayne State University that showed over 3,000 homes in Detroit still needed that mold remediation services following the floods. And like I said, that was just for the most vulnerable populations as defined by their study. Beyond that, there's extensive rebuild work to be done that has hardly been addressed by the organizations like us working in the ground now. It didn't get the media attention that it really deserved. And we know that there are other challenges that take priority with regard to the flood in Detroit. But I am hoping sincerely that we are able to continue to raise the funds that we need to continue leveraging the power of volunteers and helping homeowners and their recovery from the flood, because it's really unfair that people are unable to access resources to bring them back to where they were prior to the flood. A lot of homes that we visited don't have property insurance, and without that, there's quite a gap, an unmet needs gap between what resources they have and what resources are available to them. So by being able to pull together fundraising that we can do on behalf of Detroit and the Tri-County area, as well as leveraging volunteers, we hope to be able to continue doing the work that we're so heavily involved in and committed to.
Ruben Grandin, are you from this area, or did you move to the area to be the Project Detroit director?
Yeah, I actually came here last December. I came here December 1st, and I thought I would be here for 3 weeks. That was the extent of my contract.
Oh my God!
But we kept recognizing the need was huge, and we're able to raise more and more funding. And now I've been here a little over a year now. I grew up in Iowa and graduated from the University of Iowa mm-hmm. in 2009 in the fall. And right after that, there was a big earthquake in Haiti in 2010. And I thought, man, what better way to get involved by both serving a population that's outside of Iowa, as well as being able to learn more about this nonprofit work as it relates to disaster response, then to organize and join this group, All Hands Volunteers. So mm-hmm. one of the great things about All Hands is a lot of our volunteers come from all over. And once they're here, we are able to provide the basic lodging for them. So we get people that are able to stay with us and work with us for a number of days. And we love that because people might come with relatively no skills, but we have very experienced construction guys and site supervisors that will walk them through and train them on the job to gain those skills. Mm-hmm. And after they continue to volunteer with us for a while, they become really effective at what they're doing. And it definitely serves the city where we're working or the region where we're working. And it also provides a valuable experience and empowerment for that volunteer. Those are skills that they can take with them to the next disaster or to wherever they want to go after this.
That's great. Any for people listening here on It's Your Community, Ruben Grandin, and they want to get involved with Hands, All Hands Volunteers, how do they do that?
Yeah, I would first just say that if anybody is interested in learning more about us, they can visit our website at www.hands.org. I would just encourage anyone who is listening to pay attention to your desire to assist others throughout the country or even the world when you see that others are challenges of natural disaster. Like I just shared with Vanessa, this is exactly how I got involved in this line of work following the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. The rewards of joining others in this work far exceeded my expectations, and I believe it's true for many of the volunteers that we get to come through here. We are always looking for volunteers and more people to help. And our biggest need right now in Detroit to continue is additional funding. Right now, all the money raised will go directly to our project in Detroit and to the field to do the work. We have a donor that's agreed to pay for all of our administrative costs. So any dollar that we're able to raise this month will go directly into the field. And we actually have a donor, thanks to this radio interview, that is willing to do a match. So anybody that donated $25 would be matched dollar for dollar and would turn into $50, or $100 would turn in to $200.
Wow.
People can donate by going to hands.org. Sorry, Vanessa, I think I cut you off.
Oh, no, no, I think that's wonderful. I think it's a great match, and you heard it right here on Air to Your Community. Go to hands.org, and they have a great sponsor that's going to match your donations. That's wonderful, Ruben Grandin. Thanks for joining us on Air to Your Community here this morning.
Yes, thank you so much, Vanessa, for having me. It's been great to chat with you.
My pleasure. You have any comments or questions or show topics you want us to cover, get to me, Vanessa Denha. Go to info@denhamedia.com. That's denhamedia.com. And as always, I remind our listeners to connect, collaborate, and communicate with your community.
It's Your Community, a public affairs presentation of News Talk 760 WJR.